blame me, the pressure, baby. Treat this game like resume. Out top of the ropes, so I hit the flow like hello.
2:30 to 4 Monday to Friday. It is the Blitz here on AM 1450 KATE. Mitch Widmeyer here with you. Going to the phone lines, our guest today is he's kind enough to take time every week during the Gophers football season to hop on. Ryan Burns of Gopher Illustrated, our guest. Find his work there at gopherillustrated.com. Ryan, as always, we appreciate the time. Quarterback battle no more. Connor Rota was named the starter on Monday by PJ Fleck. It seemed to make sense after his performance in Corvallis. He only threw it 8 times, but it beat Demery Croft's 0 pass attempts, and Fleck kind of rolled with Connor Rota for much of the second half as well. They had been going back and forth against Buffalo, but Rota got most of the meaningful snaps against Oregon State in the second half, right?
Surely did, and again, what was once a quarterback battle has been now named an outright starter, and I'm sure we'll get into the different reasons in terms of why, but Connor Rota scored 34 points as the Gopher quarterback, and Minnesota just seemed to be moving the ball really well with him. He was making good decisions in the passing game. Again, Minnesota only passing the ball 8 times against Oregon State versus running it 58 times, including 33 of the 35 plays in the second half, 21 straight runs to end the game. And I think the motto goes, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So Minnesota was having a lot of success on the ground. They were also winning by a lot of points. So again, they really didn't have a reason to put it through the air. So Connor Rota kind of has, you know, accelerated in terms of his development. And he is now named the starter for the University of Minnesota here for the foreseeable future. So it's a good thing that, you know, we have only one starting quarterback now, but it is interesting for a few different reasons, including, as I'm sure we'll get into here in a second, Demery Croft won't be with the team this weekend.
Yeah, and as you said, Demery Croft won't be with the team this weekend. How much of that can we dive into?
Yeah, it was announced yesterday that Demery Croft won't play this weekend. He's got to take care of some things off the field, and this is all things that have come to the surface since Minnesota landed back in the Twin Cities after Oregon State. So, there's not really a whole lot we can speak to. Again, these are still kids between 18 and 21 years old. They do have some off-the-field things that they're trying to get with, including Demery Croft. So I'm just hoping that he can work through the things that are keeping him from playing right now, and I hope that he can overcome those and come back and help this Gopher football team because, again, you see that he can do some things, including that 64-yard touchdown. But Demery Croft won't be available Saturday, and then Minnesota heads into a bye week. So we'll have to see if he's back for Big Ten play. So for those asking, well, if Connor Rota goes down, who's the next guy up then? Well, that'd be Seth Green, a highly touted guy that came in. Hasn't exactly progressed as quickly as people thought, but in that same respect, he's only going into his redshirt sophomore season. So Connor Rota is the guy going forward, and again, I thought that he showed both in the passing and in the running game that he took a step forward Saturday night.
What was your logic? We look at the on-the-field product, what sort of progressed and unraveled in Corvallis on Saturday night. What was your logic, Ryan Burns, as to why they hardly passed? Because to me it was, one, the running game was working so well, and two, I don't see a point to show your hand when you don't have to. That game was out of reach in the third quarter. I know a lot of people said, look, Connor Rota was good, but he was 7 of 8. They only threw it 8 times on record. You take out a couple of the pass attempts where there were flags on the field. I don't blame them for doing that. The game was out of reach third quarter. You don't need to show your full hand in week 2 when you've already got a game virtually wrapped up.
Yeah, it's for those two reasons, and as well, for anybody who stayed up and watched the game, you noticed in the first half, especially in the second quarter, it looked like a monsoon going on out there, so rather than try and pass the ball, as folks saw how slippery the ball was with the number of turnovers because of that rain, Minnesota just didn't really have to pass it. Again, if you're having success on the ground, which Minnesota was, they ended up totaling over 250 rushing yards, 5 rushing touchdowns, and the game script, as you mentioned, again, Minnesota wins 48-14. Minnesota scores 28 points and gives up none in the second half. There really wasn't a point in passing after the first half. So, again, we haven't seen what a Kirk Ciarrocca offense looks like, and that's exciting to an extent. You've only been able to see really 4 quarters of it, and that's in the first half of the first 2 games. Again, you're seeing that Kirk is being creative, unlike previous offensive coordinators, in terms of trying to get Tyler Johnson and Connor Rota on the same page. Again, they've had quite the connection through 2 weeks. Tyler Johnson over 100 receiving yards again, another 60-plus yard touchdown on the exact same route in terms of the post. So, again, we haven't seen a Kirk Schrock offense because Minnesota's been winning. Again, against Buffalo, they knew that they weren't going to lose, so they just went extremely vanilla with inside zone, power, read option. They basically did the same thing in the second half again, except that instead of no points being scored like against Buffalo, Minnesota's able to put 28 up. So, again, I think that as the schedule gets more, as the schedule gets tougher, you're going to see what an actual Kirk Schrock offense looks like, and that's going to be pretty creative.
Did it appear to you, Ryan, that from the get-go, like not even as the Gophers were putting up points, but from the get-go, Connor Rhoda, I don't know if I want to use the word like swagger, but he had like a juju, he had like confidence right from the start, and it seemed to kind of trickle down to his teammates, and he was very active on the sidelines Saturday night. I felt like week one, Buffalo, of course you've got the dueling quarterback battle between he and Demaryius Croft, both guys kind of seemed tight and they weren't really loosey-goosey, which was kind of expected. I thought it was, I don't want to say a night and day difference, but he seemed very in his element, very confident right from the start against Oregon State.
Absolutely, and that was one of the biggest keys for him going from game one to game two, is he had to improve in all aspects of his game. Coach Fleck talks about changing your best. I thought he changed his best in terms of how he, in the passing game and the running game, and how he just held himself. You know, he seemed to be a more confident player out there. He seemed to be trusting himself a lot more because, again, against Buffalo, he didn't take the ball once. Well, against Oregon State, he scrambled five times and he kept once on read option. Now, did he make all the correct reads on all six of those runs? No. But at least he's gaining more and more trust in himself that he can be an asset with his legs on the ground, because Minnesota's going to need that in the games going forward here if he is the remaining starting quarterback for the next 10 games. He's going to have to continue to improve like he did from week one to week two in the read option. Continue to improve on his reads in the passing game, going from progression one to two to three. And again, that's what we saw. We saw a progression and a step forward against Oregon State. Now he's going to have to continue to do that as Minnesota comes back home against Middle Tennessee State on Saturday. But all indications were that, you know, from what I saw when I rewatched the tape back three times here since the game was played, I thought Connor did play with some swagger. I thought that he was more confident, more assertive, and you saw that show in terms of in statistical things and just when you watch the game.
Ryan Burns of Gopher Illustrated always enjoys time with us here on the program. He is our guest this afternoon on the Blitz. How much of the result Saturday is you saying, wow, maybe Minnesota is better than I thought, and how much of it is Oregon State's a really bad football team? Like, where do you split up sort of those two items? Because Oregon, we both talked last week, like the plus three line, Minnesota being a 3-point underdog or 3.5 in some outlets, kind of caught us off guard because you and I both saw the product Oregon State had produced the first 2 weeks and it wasn't good. Not saying Minnesota was brilliant against Buffalo, they weren't, but Oregon State kind of proved to be the team that many of us thought they would be.
I think it's somewhere in between. I do think that Oregon State is an awful football team, at least defensively, and I'm worried about Gary Anderson's job. I know he's in year three, and you know traditionally coaches get to that fourth or fifth year before we really can make any indication of them. But, I mean, this team has regressed from year one to year two and now into year three, and that's not the trajectory that you want to be on. I was texting with some current collegiate coaches at the Power 5 level during the game, and all three of them texted me the same thing in terms of Gary Anderson may not make it to November. I mean, this team defensively is abysmal, and they are just getting moved, and they're getting run on, and there's nothing that they can really do about it right now. Now, in that same respect, if you're going to be a 7-8 win Big Ten team, like I think Minnesota has the capacity to do in 2017, that's exactly what you have to do to a terrible team like Oregon State is defensively. Again, it's always nice to go into a place like the Pac-12 after dark. It's a 9 p.m. kickoff. You're playing in a monsoon, different things such as that, and come out with a 30-point victory. But that's what you should do if you're a quality Big Ten team, which, again, it looks like the Gophers are going to be again. If you're going to be a 6-7-8 win team, that's exactly what you have to do to a team like Oregon State, and Coach Fleck had the squad ready to go.
I said to Mike Grimm on Monday when he was on, like, what I don't know what else we can say about Rodney Smith and Shannon Brooks that hasn't already been said in the last couple of years. Like, I have no more descriptions for either of them, and that two-headed monster was out in full force. And there were a couple of those typical Rodney Smith runs, Ryan, where he's bottled up, looks like there's nothing to do in the backfield, and he turns it into a few yards. And the two that I remember on Saturday came at critical junctures in the drives for Minnesota.
Yes, and the nice thing about both backs, and I'm hoping people appreciate, is how hard they actually work for all these yards. I mean, from watching the fourth quarter back, Minnesota's up 20 points. It's in the fourth quarter. It's like 11:30 Central Time, and you're seeing Rodney Smith, you know, roll out with his quarterback and try to throw a block against the Mike linebacker that springs Connor Rota for a first down. Or you see Rodney Smith on a third down get stuck behind the line, but then he keeps his legs moving, keeps his legs churning, and he turns a negative one-yard gain into a five-yard first down. Or Shannon Brooks continually running through contact, continually keeping his legs churning and trying to get the extra yard. It's so much fun to watch running backs who never give up and who are always trying to get the extra yard. And the nice thing about both backs is they're very dependable in terms of not turning the ball over. Shannon Brooks didn't have a fumble all of last season. He hasn't had one yet this season, and neither has Rodney Smith. Again, these are two backs that, again, traditionally when you're trying to get that extra yard, that's when you sometimes lose ball security, and these two have been fantastic with ball security through the last, you know, season and two games here thus far in 2017. Again, I just hope folks can appreciate the duo that Minnesota has here, because they might go down as some of the most prolific running backs in Golden Gopher football history. I think that they may end up being better than Barber and Maroney. Again, I think they are absolutely at that level, if not a step above. So Rodney Smith and Shannon Brooks are the two workhorses of this team. You see that with their 47 combined carries, combining for, I think, somewhere around 180 rushing yards and four touchdowns. It's something that people need to appreciate while they still have it.
I'd be remiss if I didn't ask a former offensive lineman himself, how much better, how much improved were the big boys up front?
I thought that they were improved in both facets of the game. I still think that they have a ways to go in terms of run blocking. But what we haven't talked about enough on this program is how great they've been at protecting the passer. They haven't given up a sack through 2 weeks. And I understand that Minnesota only threw the ball eight times on Saturday night. But on all eight throws, Connor Rota was adequately protected, and he had plenty of time to survey the field, and he was able to step up into each and every one of those throws. Again, this is an offensive line unit that has three guys that didn't play in the spring because they were recovering from off-season surgeries, and the other two are just made their first collegiate road start. So it's going to take some time for this unit to come back together as everybody's adjusting to injuries. But pass protection-wise, I think they've been extremely good. Now, on the running game side of things, I think that they took a step forward in terms of they kept their pad level low. They were able to get more burst off the line. Specifically, I thought guys like Connor Rolson from Monticello, Minnesota, I thought that he made a big improvement from game one to game two. He looked like he was playing more confidently. And just the guys on the interior of the offensive line, again, they were challenged all week from Coach Fleck talking about how this offensive line played as five individuals and not one collective unit. Well, I think that they came together, and I thought that they put up a better performance. Again, they opened up 250-plus rushing yards, five rushing touchdowns. There's still a lot of room to grow there. They still have a long way to go to become a dominant run-blocking offensive line, but I think that they've been very, very good in the pass protection side of things.
His work can be found at gopherillustrated.com. He joins us this afternoon. He is Ryan Burns. Defensive side of things, Jonathan Celestine was the bright light, I thought, for the Gophers. He was a monster. On the TV broadcast, they cut away to his mother, who was in the stands, and they cut away to her a couple of times. I don't know how much extra, you know, pep in his step he had because his mom was there. His offseason was certainly littered with tragedies. Back this year, and he played like a dude on a mission Saturday.
He did, and that was very fun to see. And again, for folks who don't know the Jonathan Celestine story, someone that didn't have a Division I FBS offer until 2 weeks before signing day, Minnesota comes in, they're able to get him. You know, he's not highly thought of because, again, how did all these Division I teams miss on a kid from Georgia? And now look how far he's come. And he lost his father over the summer, and so Coach Fleck has been kind of like a second dad to him. And he's talked about that in numerous media sessions. And then his mom, obviously, again, you lose your dad, so you're going to become a little bit closer to your mom. She's able to come out to Oregon State, see her son play, and have a hell of a game. 10 total tackles, I believe, two quarterback hits, and he absolutely lit up the running back on read option, plowing him backwards into the quarterback. And again, there's a reason he's known as Thumper around the Golden Gopher football program, and it's just very fun to see that a kid who's battled adversity from high school even through the summer play as well as he's been playing here of late.
Middle Tennessee State this weekend back at TCF Bank Stadium are the Golden Gophers. I think Middle Tennessee State might be better than Oregon State. I'm not embellishing or trying to be funny. Like, you take away the location of last week's game and the Gophers having to go all the way out to the West Coast for a 9 p.m. local kickoff here, now that they're hosting MTSU, if you just stack up those two squads and take away the location, MTSU against Oregon State, I may take Middle Tennessee State. Is that a foolish take?
No, I think this is going to be Minnesota's toughest challenge of the non-conference thus far, especially if they are able to get their star quarterback, Brock Studstill, back for this game. I know that he had an MRI yesterday. We're still waiting to hear back the results from that. But Coach Fleck spoke about yesterday when he was on with Joe at the Joe Sensors with Mike Grimm that he expects him to play. And why this matchup is so dangerous for the Golden Gophers is Middle Tennessee State has a very explosive offense in the passing game. And you look at where Minnesota's most vulnerable, that's in the secondary, specifically at cornerback. So you look at how Minnesota matches up there. Middle Tennessee has got a receiver by the name of Richie James, someone that was a preseason All-American, someone who had 1,500 receiving yards, 15-plus touchdowns last season. He is going to be targeted early and often, no matter if it's Antonio Chenault or Keandre Thomas on him. So I'm very interested to see how Rob Smith game plans this game in terms of, can Minnesota get Middle Tennessee State into passing down to get on those guys like Kamal Martin, Carter Coughlin, Blake Cashman. You know, get these different guys in the field to kind of create pressure and make sure that this MTSU passing game can't get on track. This just doesn't set up well in terms of Oregon State wanted to run the ball to set up the pass. Well, Middle Tennessee is going to want to pass the ball all over the field. The Minnesota secondary, which again is the weak part of this defense, is going to be tested early and often, and we're going to have to see how they respond Saturday afternoon.
Gophers opened as 9.5-point favorites. Thoughts on the line? I'm staying far away from that line. I have no idea what to make of it. Last week, you and I were both intrigued by the Gophers being +3 at the time that we had talked, thinking I didn't know if I was being naive, but I said I really like the Gophers +3. I don't think we brought it up week one against Buffalo. 9.5-point favorites against Middle Tennessee State. I'm staying away from it. I have no clue what to make of that line.
I think it's a little high because I think Minnesota's probably going to come away with a 7-point victory. 7 to 10 points. So again, I think it's been bet down since that 9.5. Because again, this matchup just really doesn't go well for the Gopher defense. Now, maybe the Gopher defense comes out and surprises us, because again, they have been absolutely sensational in second half adjustments through two games. The second straight game against Oregon State where Minnesota only allows 3 rushing yards in the second half. So for those keeping count at home, opposing offenses against Minnesota in the second half have run the ball 14 times for 6 yards total. Minnesota's not giving up anything in the second half on the ground, and they've been more than adequate in the second half against the pass. So Middle Tennessee State's defense isn't very good, and that's where if this Minnesota offense, and we're able to see a full game of what Kirk Schrocka has a game plan for, I think that's where Minnesota can probably pull ahead and get maybe north of that 7 point. But again, I think this is going to be a closer game than most folks probably expect, not knowing a whole lot about Middle Tennessee State. But this is an explosive passing offense that's going to be, I think, giving Minnesota fits at times on Saturday.
We'll finish up looking around the landscape of college football like we normally do. This past weekend, USC takes out Stanford. There were a few big games. Clemson suffocated Auburn's offense and beat them. As it goes for the Big Ten, the big one was Oklahoma-Ohio State, and the Sooners delivered a blow to the Buckeyes in the shoe. I still say, based off Ohio State's schedule and how good I think the Big Ten is, Ryan, if Ohio State wins out, and I don't know they will, but if they do, they'll be at least right back in the mix at the end of the year, correct?
I would agree with that. Again, we don't really know how this is all going to play out in the Big Ten East. I think we have a clear picture in the Big Ten West in terms of, until somebody can dethrone Wisconsin, it seems like the de facto pick from the Big Ten West. But when you look at just the Big Ten East in general, again, how is Michigan going to respond to this news? How is Penn State? How is Ohio State going to bounce back from this? Because, again, that three-headed monster, I think, are all rated within the top 10. You know, somebody's going to have to emerge from that. But as you mentioned, if Ohio State wins out, I still think they make the college football playoff. But, again, we're a long ways away from that. But it is interesting to see the way Baker Mayfield was able to move the ball up and down that Ohio State defense in the shoe. I wasn't expecting that. I think I picked Oklahoma when I was on the program last week. So I don't know that you should be taking a ton of advice from that pick.
Well, this week you lined us up perfectly. 3 more games to lob your direction, and we'll start with number 23 Tennessee at number 24 Florida. Just the straight-up game itself, who do you like?
I like Florida. I you know, I think that, you know, we can take a stroll down Narrative Street in terms of Florida coming back, you know, coming back home in terms of the hurricanes that just went through. You know, there's going to be a lot of emotion in the stadium. And frankly, I just think Tennessee is perennially overrated. I know that they are 2-0 to start here. I know that Florida is 0-1 after having their game canceled last week. But I just think that this is a very, very ugly, like 16-13 Florida win. I know that Florida's favored 4.5 right now, but I just think that the Gators are able to get it done.
Clemson at Louisville, great game last year. I believe Clemson was the host, came down to the end. Lamar Jackson coming up a little bit short. This year it's at Louisville. Who do you like in the rematch?
That's a great game to try and talk through because, again, Louisville's quarterback is absolutely sensational. I think he passed for over 300 yards and another 100 on the ground last week. I think it was something like 5 or 6 total touchdowns. So how is Lamar Jackson able to come against the best defense he'll face all season in Clemson? How does Clemson respond in terms of, you know, again, this is a big game, and traditionally Clemson hasn't always played well in big games. Again, we talk about the national championship game last year, that being an outlier. So how does Dabo Swinney have this squad ready to go in terms of going down to Louisville? I think Clemson probably emerges with a very high-scoring game, like a 34-31 victory.
And I always like to throw in the Big Ten flavor. I looked up and down, though. The Big Ten kind of has like a lame slate of games in the non-conference this weekend, so I thought we'd go with the spread pick instead of head-to-head. The Badgers, Wisconsin, are 13-point road favorites at BYU. It's a tough one I was debating. That's why I wanted to throw it your direction. I think I like the Badgers minus 13, even though they're on the road, because BYU's offense can't score.
I was just about to say, I like the Badgers here, too, just because I know that BYU can't score, and I know that Wisconsin is probably going to get ball control in the second half, and until someone proves that they can stop that offensive line from grading out holes when things get tough, I think Jonathan Taylor is going to have a lot of room to run through. So, I mean, I don't think this is going to be the prettiest of games. Some are probably around 30-6, 27-6, somewhere around there. We're going to have to find out and see how the Badgers look on the road, this being their first true road test heading out to Provo in Utah. But I do like the Badgers cover.
Find his work at gopherillustrated.com. Ryan, as always, we appreciate it.
Talk to you next week, my friend.
More next year on the Blitz.